Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moscowen. Picture this. It's August 2020, and you're taking in the beauty of Chester County's Marsh Creek Lake. Nearby, there's underground horizontal drilling happening. It's to make way for a section of 20-inch pipe that will carry liquid natural gas across the state. But something goes wrong, and 21,000 gallons of drilling fluid spills into the lake. That's the biggest leak at this location, but by no means the first, and just one of many accidents that have affected wetlands and water wells across Pennsylvania during the construction of the Mariner East 2 pipeline. It's all detailed in a grand jury report released last week by Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro. He brought 48 criminal charges against the company Energy Transfer for these mishaps, also for the company's failure to report other problems, and the use of unapproved additives in drilling fluid. So what happens next? On today's Radio Times, we talk through it with a slate of guests. First, WHYY and State Impact reporter Susan Phillips is joining us in studio. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Kevin.
And later we have Penn State Law Professor Hannah Weissman and two people who live along the pipeline route, State Rep Danielle Friel-Otten and Advocate Ginny Marcel Kerslake. Okay, Susan Phillips, we're starting with you. You've been reporting on this pipeline for years. How do you see these criminal charges against Energy Transfer changing the conversation?
Yeah, and just to be clear, before I answer that question, I just want to be clear that this pipeline is carrying natural gas liquids. It's different than liquid natural gas. It's natural gas liquids is ethane, propane, butane. It's highly flammable. If it were to leak, it's the reason why there's a lot of people worried about the safety of this of this pipeline. But to talk about the criminal charges, what's interesting is, you know, these criminal charges aren't against an individual person. You're not going to see somebody, you know, in a perp walk. You're not going to see anybody go to jail. What you're going to see is the same thing that has happened since the start of this pipeline, the start of construction back in February 2017, which is fines, right? That's the limitation of charging a corporation with environmental crimes. And what we've seen over time since the construction started on this pipeline is it doesn't seem like the fines that have already been leveled, which I think are more than $20 million for this particular pipeline, right? $30 million for another pipeline that Energy Transfer and Sunoco built, the Revolution pipeline, for when that pipeline exploded. And yet we still see these incidents happening over and over and over again.
So what has Energy Transfer said about the charges this time around?
They're radio silent. I mean, they haven't said anything. They didn't even respond with, you know, one of those corporate pat statements that they usually put out there.
And if we go back through the history, you've been reporting on this since the permitting process. I guess help us understand a little bit more about the pipeline in general. Like you said, it's natural gas liquids that are coming from Ohio all the way across the state to this export terminal in Marcus Hook, Delaware County. And what happens then at that export terminal? It's sent abroad, right?
Exactly. So there, these natural gas liquids are basically the material that you can create plastics with. And so they're being sent abroad to create more plastics. And just to give you a sense of just the industrial size and weight of this project, it's going 300 miles across the state through 17 counties, 2,700 properties, 1,200 streams or wetlands, 50 feet right of ways. And this is three pipelines, right? There's the 20-inch, the 16-inch, and then there's the original pipeline that used to send gasoline out west that they, you know, reversed the flow, and now they're sending natural gas liquids. And they're coming to Delaware County, loaded onto ships, and sent to Scotland to make plastics.
Got it. And so the company that is Energy Transfer, basically, they bought Sunoco, and Sunoco was the company that originally started
this
process.
Right.
And they had to apply for permits to do all of this with the state of Pennsylvania. So why did Pennsylvania approve these permits, and what was supposed to be in it, or what is in it for Pennsylvania?
Right. So the permitting process was a mess to begin with. I mean, one of the things that this grand jury report and my reporting showed is that DEP was just not, the Department of Environmental Protection was not prepared to permit or oversee this. They did this project. They didn't have the expertise. They didn't have the person power to do it. So the permits from the very beginning, when we started reporting on this, were full of deficiencies. And DEP had to keep sending the company back to the table to redo them. There's reports we reported on that, you know, there was some evidence that suggested that the Wolf administration really wanted this project to go through, that they put pressure on DEP to just get these permits done, get it through. When it finally got through, and mind you, there's a lot of people across the length of this pipeline that did not want to give their land to it. And so they, you know, they land was taken through eminent domain. When it finally got through and they started building in February 2017, you know, things started happening quite immediately. And suddenly we were reporting on drilling mud spills. We were reporting on sinkholes, lots of things.
So, but just to go back to that, like, what's the state's incentive for approving this? Like, what does the state think it's getting out of this?
So here's the interesting thing is that the weird thing about this pipeline is it didn't go through a federal permitting process. It typically would have because it really does start in Ohio, and so it's an interstate pipeline. But nevertheless, it fell into this weird netherland of permitting where the Department of Environmental Protection had oversight only on Clean Water Act permits, which is like stream crossings and erosion control. So it's not like that. There was no entity that could say yes or no to this permit, or I mean, to this pipeline in general. It was more like the Department of Environmental Protection had to give them permits to cross wetlands. The Public Utility Commission, like their role really is about the safety. There's nobody in the state right now, no state entity that has control over siting. So there's no entity that could have said, like the federal government can say, like, no, you can't put it here, you have to put it there. You know, there was really a lack of legislation and regulation.
So if Governor Wolf wanted to completely oppose this and say, no, this is not happening, you're saying he didn't have the power to do that, or he could have?
Sure. I mean, listen, I mean, he has control over the Department of Environmental Protection. They work for him. So, you know, there's a lot he could have done in terms of those permits. You know, there's a lot of people who say the PUC should have been more involved, right?
The Public Utility
Public
Commission.
Public Utility Commission, because the whole issue with eminent domain sort of stemmed back to this like archaic decision that was made in the 1930s by the precursor to the Public Utility Commission. Mm-hmm. So now the Public Utility Commission is evaluating how they're going to oversee these type of pipelines going into the future as well.
Got it. Okay, so it gets approved and it starts to be built. And as you have reported, environmentalists really were warning that problems would arise from the get-go. And then when they started to arise, we started to really understand, I guess, how this was affecting people across the state. So tell me more about what problems happened.
Sure. And, you know, it's important to note that it's not just environmentalists, like physical, like authorized, licensed geologists were saying this is going to happen. Mm. When you drill underneath through limestone or karst geology, which is what Chester County basically is, this is going to happen. Even a press person early on for this project told me, like, well, we know there's going to be quote unquote inadvertent returns, which is industry parlance for a drilling mud spill. Mm-hmm. And so what started to happen was, you know, and this is something that's interesting because a lot of this stuff happened in rural areas where people didn't see what was going on. There's not a lot of press coverage out in these rural areas, but you did start to hear about, like, you know, trout fishermen were angry because suddenly their, you know, high quality trout stream is full of mud. Mm. And drilling mud, it's important to note, is not, it's quote unquote toxic. But what it does is if it goes into a wetland, it's going to smother, you know, make the water really cloudy. It's going to smother the little bugs, you know, at the bottom of the food chain. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to impact the ecosystem in a really bad way.
And just to unpack this drilling fluid or drilling mud, it's like they're trying to drill a hole underground, and they've got a drill that essentially uses water pressure or fluid pressure to help them drill this hole.
They use the mud as, yeah, just as, it's not really, it lubricates the drill head.
And it's supposed to be contained. Like, they're supposed to get all that fluid back at the end of the process.
Exactly.
But then it'll seep into some crack or fissure or some leak will occur. And that's how it gets into a wetland or a water well. And that's where the problems happen.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, this report details that DEP, I think, got more than 180 drinking water well complaints. Because a lot of people in Pennsylvania rely on well water.
Right. And sinkholes were the other big problem.
Sinkholes were huge in Chester County. You know, Lisa Drive, that was really the first time we saw these huge sinkholes happen, which exposed one of the pipelines that was already operating. The Public Utility Commission shut down the pipeline because that would have been very dangerous to have a leak, could have exploded. But these sinkholes were happening more than we knew because Sunoco and Energy Transfer were not reporting them.
Got it. And that's the other thing that this Attorney General report really outlines is this failure to report. I guess tell me more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the things about the regulations is, you know, it relies upon companies to self-report. I mean, and that's one of the things that this report really shows is how inadequate our oversight is. We just don't have enough people at the Department of Environmental Protection, and we don't have enough expertise at the Department of Environmental Protection. And you also saw that, you know, the company was underreporting how much was spilling, even when they did report. For example, Marsh Creek Lake, when we reported that, you know, both the DEP and the company told me 8,000 gallons of drilling mud spills. Well, lo and behold, I read in this report, it was more than 21,000.
And you weren't surprised by that.
No, and at this point I wasn't. I mean, listen, like even, you know, Raystown Lake, which is a very popular recreational lake out in Huntington County, you know, apparently there were like 8 incidents of hundreds of thousands, you know, gallons of drilling mud spilled into the lake such that they found like 2 feet of bentonite mud at the bottom of the lake, you know? So it's like none of this was reported to the DEP.
Gotcha. Okay. Coming up on a break here in about a minute, but I'm just curious how you see things playing out from this point. Is this just another fine to pay, cost of doing business, pipeline gets completed, or do you see this as a game changer?
You know, at this point, they have a very small stretch left to complete this pipeline, and they already are sending product through the pipeline right now through a workaround. It's going to be more fines. I don't know how that's going to change the game. The fines really aren't that high enough to really make an impact on what this company does.
Okay, we're talking with WHYY and State Impact reporter Susan Phillips about the criminal charges brought by Attorney General Josh Shapiro against Energy Transfer. We're continuing the conversation after this short break. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499, or hit us up on social media at WHYY Radio Times on Twitter or Facebook. We want to hear from you.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking this hour about the criminal charges filed by the state of Pennsylvania against the company Energy Transfer related to the construction of the Mariner East 2 pipeline. Attorney General Josh Shapiro has filed 48 criminal counts against the company for allegedly breaking environmental laws. Joining us next to talk about the impact on people who live along the pipeline's path are two Chester County residents. State Rep. Danielle Friel Otten ran for elected office and won based on her opposition to the pipeline. Also joining us is community organizer Ginny Marcel Kerslake. She's in studio with us right now. And Ginny, you have pipeline running essentially through your property. Let's start with you. Essentially, your life changed the day in 2015 when someone from Sunoco knocked on your door. What happened?
Yeah, my husband and I were home. There was this knock on the door. There was a woman there, land agent with an easement. And she said they wanted to put two new pipelines through our property, that we wouldn't even notice construction, that they'd be in and out in a couple weeks. And, oh, by the way, if we didn't sign, they would take us to court and do it anyway because they had eminent domain.
And, you know, you're just a kind of a regular person. You're a mom. You're juggling life. And you just, this, I guess you signed?
Yeah. I mean, we gave it some careful consideration. They told us that they were just like all the other pipelines that are crisscrossing the area. And, yeah, we were very busy with a couple teenage boys we were raising. Now they're grown. It's been that long that this has been going on. And, yes, we signed. We felt that we'd been bullied and lied to now, like so many.
And how has having this pipeline adjacent or in your property affected your day-to-day life since that day in 2015?
Oh, it's had a huge impact. The construction started 2 years later. So it started in the summer of 2017. Turned out the drill site is directly across the road from our house. These huge walls are up. They have been there for 4.5 years. Construction has been going on for hundreds of days, not 2 weeks, stretched out over that 4.5 year period. And when construction happens, it's really an intolerable level of noise and vibrations through the house. But on top of that, there are all the impacts to our community, to families with water wells, and it really has taken over my life and other residents that have been standing up to this.
Danielle Friel-Otten, I want to bring you into the conversation. You've been a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives since 2018, really based on this issue, as I understand it. Danielle, what have you learned from making this leap from concerned citizen to elected official?
Well, I've learned so much about how these things happen, how the levers of government are pulled on both sides of the aisle by campaign finance, pressure from stakeholders, quote unquote stakeholders, who are not the stakeholders in the community who are impacted, and really how so much of how this unfolds and how this happens is a result of pressures in Harrisburg and the political campaign piece of things that really do a major disservice to the communities and to the voters. I say all of the time, these quote unquote stakeholders can write checks, but at the end of the day, the people who vote for us are the people who are our stakeholders and who we should be listening to, who we should be advocating for. And that's not always what's happening in Harrisburg.
So we've been hearing about really problems across the state. Susan Phillips was kind of detailing, you know, what's been happening in different counties, and this is a, you know, a statewide pipeline. I'm curious, Rep. Otten, if you feel like you've seen any sort of bipartisanship, you know, along the fact that this pipeline runs through red Pennsylvania, runs through blue Pennsylvania. These problems, you know, are happening everywhere. Do you feel like there's any working across the aisle on this issue based on people who have seen these problems firsthand?
I mean, to be totally honest, the only bipartisanship I've seen is a bipartisan effort to ignore the problems. You know, I have brought it up numerous times to numerous people in numerous different counties of the state, both sides of the aisle. And most folks just really try and get out of the conversation and sweep it under the rug. It's something that is not, it's a taboo subject in Harrisburg. It's something that is really not to be talked about. And when you do, there's great backlash for bringing it up.
Is that, I guess, because of the bipartisan love for new job creation? Is that really what it comes down to?
Maybe. I think more it's a fear. It's a fear factor of, I mean, if what happened to me last year, I obviously have been very vocal about this issue. I've not back down, in spite of nobody really listening, and also, and lots of backlash. And last year in my reelection campaign, my first reelection, $500,000 was spent against me in my primary because the oil and gas industry, the building trades kind of teamed up to try to get me out of office and silence the voices of my community and the communities across the Commonwealth who are speaking up on this issue. And so I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of fear around that. Nobody wants to go through that. And so if there's a way to avoid it, most people do. And so it just becomes that subject that's a real hot potato.
Hmm. Back to you, Ginny. You know, I'm curious, what specifically do you think needs to change in the way Pennsylvania writes and enforces environmental laws? Like, what are you writing to your state reps and your state senators and your governor asking for?
That's a great question. There are two pieces to this. One is we need to have Mariner East halted. We need to have those permits pulled. We need to have the operation of the 8-inch and 12-inch line halted. Beyond that, and this is one of the reasons we fight so hard, is that we have to ensure that something like this does not happen again to other families and communities. And in that regard, we need tougher regulations through the PUC and through our state legislator to protect the environment and to protect people. And what Rep. Friel Otten was just expressing, the environment is like in Harrisburg. There's a huge disconnect between that and what the people and what the voters have to say about this. You actually have bipartisan opposition to this. You know, whether you're Republican or whether you're Democrat or independent, everybody is for the safety of their families and communities. Everybody is for personal property rights and clean air and clean water. So, there's that disconnect.
I guess it's easier to feel that when you're a little farther away from the pipeline, but if you're close to it, you're saying that kind of brings people together in a united opposition to it.
It does. And it's also important to remember that it's not just people who have this in their backyard. The blast radius for Mariner East has been investigated in three different risk assessments. And the highest was from a risk assessment commissioned by Delaware County Council. And that had a blast radius of up to 1.25 miles. So when you think of all the people that don't just live in that blast zone, but travel in and out of it, shop in it, work in it, go to school in it, it's a lot of people.
And this is a heavily populated part of the state. From Delaware, from Chester to Delaware County, essentially the last stretch of this pipeline, lots of people live and work and move through this area.
Exactly. And when Mariner East construction hit Delaware and Chester County, that's when you really started to hear about it.
And I guess there's the, how do you feel about that kind of lingering fear? Like, do you, is that something that's very conscious to you that there could be a problem at some point, or do you feel like, you know what, it's probably going to be fine?
No, it's a fear, and it's a very real fear. We do know that pipelines leak, and we do know that the risk is enormous for Mariner East, particularly because the consequence is so high. Risk is the product of probability and consequence. And especially in my township, in West Whiteland Township, which is the most densely populated, but all of these densely populated communities, a leak on Mariner East will be a catastrophic explosion. And we do not have an emergency plan to warn and protect the public.
Hmm. Back to you, State Rep. Friel Otten. I'm curious if you can kind of talk us through the eminent domain process that happened here and how the company was able to acquire the land and maybe what more could have been done to prevent that by people who didn't want that. And if you could go back, I guess, in history, what would have been different, or could something have been different?
Well, I think the kind of linchpin of this whole thing was when a public utility needs to have a certificate of conveyance or convenience, they call it. And that certificate in Pennsylvania, they need that certificate in order to file for eminent domain. In this situation, what happened was Energy Transfer purchased the old pipelines that have been going across Pennsylvania for almost 100 years now. And those pipelines carried home heating fuel from the refinery in Philadelphia and in Marcus Hook out to the western part of the state. And that, you know, I would say those pipelines, had they leaked, and they have numerous times, if they leaked, there would be a risk of serious environmental damage for sure. Mm-hmm. And damage to water. But there wouldn't be the same risk to public safety that comes with ethane, propane, and butane at such high volumes and under such high pressure. Those pipelines were purchased by Energy Transfer and then reversed and repurposed. So there were a couple of things historically that could have been done from a regulatory perspective that could have made this outcome different. One would have been requiring a new certificate of conveyance for a new product, a new company, a new plan, new pipelines, like actually new pipelines in those easements. But they're being allowed to utilize the same certificate from 100 years ago to put this new infrastructure in place brings in a tremendous risk to the community. In addition to that, when they reversed the flow and changed the product, there was an opportunity from a regulatory perspective to be able to kind of have some oversight on that and to be able to make a difference in the outcome there as well. There should have been some kind of public comment, public participation. And what we found out is that they were able to switch that product and reverse the flow of that product. And the people who live right next to it didn't even know until a year and a half later, when the land agents were coming for new easements, construction easements to put the new lines in. Mm. And so we're operating on policy and oversight and regulation from 100 years ago on something that is a lot more dangerous than what was originally put in the ground there, and also development that has completely changed those communities and the landscape and the risk. I would say historically that is kind of the linchpin of this entire situation.
Gotcha. I do want to invite listeners to give a call. This is a hot topic. The phone lines, though, are open right now. 1-888-477-9499 is the number. Or hit us up on Twitter at WHYY Radio Times. We also have a Facebook page at WHYY Radio Times. We do have a question in from Angus. He says, we've been having similar problems with a pipeline in New Jersey. Lots of drilling mud spills. In fact, a friend had her house condemned because of the spills. He says, I'd like to know the process behind getting the charges moved to the criminal level, because we would like to push the Department of Environmental Protection and the Attorney General of New Jersey to go that way there. Is that something you can speak to, Ginny?
I'm not sure how things work in New Jersey, but I do know that in Pennsylvania, in order for the Attorney General to take on this investigation, he had to have a referral from a district attorney.
A local county district attorney.
Yeah. And I know this because I was actually involved in this Attorney General investigation happening, that referral coming from a DA. Back in February of 2019, I and four other residents of Chester and Delaware County went to the Delaware County DA, and we went with our concerns and evidence and asked her to refer this case to the Attorney General. And she told us to that she would take it to him and to keep quiet and just wait. And a few weeks later, I'll never forget it. We had this conference call with her, and she said, yes, he had accepted it, and they would be making an announcement shortly. And that was 2.5 years ago. We've been waiting 2.5 years for this, but that's how we did it in Pennsylvania.
Really speaks to the power of community to document these problems and also to continue to advocate for them.
100%. What happened last week with that announcement and the whole investigation, and that was really that really speaks to all of the work that so many in our community did, and speaking out and just documenting all of these egregious violations and failure to report and everything.
Yeah. I guess I'm just curious if your reaction to, you know, the economy debate, right? So there's people who, you know, we had a reporter who looked into the political implications of energy environment when it comes to how, you know, people run for office. And we heard, you know, Danielle Friel-Otten kind of give her take on this. But you have people from the building trades who say, look, you know, the only thing that matters in my line of work is man hours. This is going to provide more work hours, provide more stable jobs for families and people and working people in this region in the building of the pipeline and then at the export terminal eventually when everything is flowing. Your reaction to that argument, that this is just part of the economy?
Well, I can appreciate that everybody wants good jobs and they want to be well paid for them. But no number of jobs are worth putting so many families and communities at risk of a catastrophic explosion. And we do know that there are more jobs to be had in renewable energy. So that's what we should be making the switch to. We should not be building more infrastructure for this, for the fossil fuel industry. We should be creating those jobs and investing that money into renewable energy.
And just a few moments before the break, but if you wanted to add a short thought on that, State Rep. Danielle Friel-Otten.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Jenny said. We all want people in Pennsylvania to thrive and have good jobs, and we also want them to have safe jobs. A lot of jobs that come with the fracking industry, many of those jobs are not unionized jobs, come with extreme risks.
Got to cut you off there. I'm sorry. But we are coming up on a break, and we will be right back with State Rep. Danielle Friel-Otten, also Advocate Jenny Marcel Kerslake. And we want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499, or hit us up on social media. We'll continue this conversation after this short break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Kevin McCrory in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking this hour about the criminal charges filed by the state of Pennsylvania against the company Energy Transfer related to the construction of the Mariner East 2 pipeline. Attorney General Josh Shapiro has filed 48 criminal counts against the company for allegedly breaking environmental laws. Joining us next is Penn State environmental law professor Hannah Wiseman. Good to have you, Hannah.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Hannah, can you give us a wider sense of how this pipeline fight fits in with, you know, the larger debate that's been happening around issues like this across the country? Has it become more common for essentially states to pursue these things in a criminal way?
It has become somewhat more common as pipeline construction has ramped up due to the increased production of gas from hydraulic fracturing. So there was a 2-year criminal investigation of the Mountain Valley Pipeline instigated by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Roanoke, Virginia, for example. That, however, did not result in any charges. There have been some similar investigations around the country, but still we're predominantly seeing civil fines for pipelines such as Dakota Access, also associated with Energy Transfer in the Midwest, as well as other civil penalties ranging from Ohio to California and many other places that are experiencing similar pipeline construction.
And since as you know, our reporter Susan Phillips said earlier, these criminal charges really are just going to result in more fines. There's not going to be anyone arrested per se for this. What's the distinction between pursuing criminal charges and just a civil action? It really seems like it's a similar outcome, right?
The distinction is primarily the message this sends. So the penalties are still quite modest. When you look at something like a $3 billion project, a $25,000 or $5,000 criminal penalty means practically nothing to the company. But the message is a stronger one, and that's what the Attorney General indicated in his statement when he summarized these charges, is the goal is to tell pipeline companies, particularly those coming to Pennsylvania from other states, such as Energy Transfer coming from Texas, that Pennsylvania means business, and that if these pipeline companies are operating in the Commonwealth, they're expected to comply with the laws, and there will be criminal penalties associated with violations, not just civil ones. Now, and that looks bad to a company's shareholders, for example, because state criminal liability is not the only type of environmental criminal liability. There's also federal environmental crime that in some cases has been imposed against pipelines. In fact, the DOJ has launched criminal investigations into some pipelines in Pennsylvania, and some federal environmental crimes do come with even with jail time. So I think the message is this could be serious, and we mean business in Pennsylvania.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line I want to take. Bob from Chester County, you know, is a person who lives near a pipeline, is very concerned about safety. Bob, what's your question or thought?
Well, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you have from the perspective of a stakeholder. It's literally in my backyard. I'm probably sitting 75 feet from it at the furthest right now as we speak. The whole process has been very frustrating. You know, when the providing agents first came in, it quickly became a realization to us that we had no choice, that we were negotiating a surrender. In the deeds in this area, they have something called additional line rights, which means that they can do it whether or not you agree to take their money. And you have no choice but to allow this pipeline through. We already had two existing 80-year-old pipelines, and the contract that they forced upon us was for two additional ones up to 24 inches. The whole project had a bandwidth of over 500,000 barrels of ethane a day. We're not talking little pipelines. We're talking transportation pipelines, which many people don't understand. And they use terms like natural gas liquids to obfuscate what's really in this product. It's not natural gas. It's not heating our homes. It's not powering local industry. It's not being used in vehicles that can reuse natural gas. A small amount of propane is offloaded in different places, but this is largely propane, ethane, and butane, mostly ethane. Ethane has an expansion ratio of over 400 to 1, which yeah. means that if a pipeline were to break, it will rapidly expand. It will sublimate from a gas to a liquid. And imagine having a balloon in your car that quickly goes from one balloon to 400 balloons as you drive home to your child's birthday party.
Yeah.
That's what happens here.
And Bob, I just want to
bomb in our backyards.
Get back to the conversation. So you feel that fear that this is something that could happen in your own backyard, and you have to live with that every day.
Well, I mean, these pipelines fail. I mean, there was the one in West Virginia not too many years ago on a 2-year-old pipeline where a weld failed on a 2-year-old pipeline. And burned homes half a mile away. Now, we're not in a rural area. Homes aren't half a mile away. Their homes are 50 feet away. Swing sets are right on top. Trampolines are right on top. You know, they have a blast ratio that they don't actually share because it's not considered the way PHMSA is set up and the way they report this is with natural gas pipelines, they don't actually have to calculate and share a blast ratio yeah. like they do with true natural gas.
I'm going to take your concerns to our guest,
right.
Bob.
I mean, our local fire station is right within that blast zone. Okay. So much for our first responders.
Thank you, Bob. I want to take Bob's concerns to you, Jenny Marcel Kerslake. You clearly share much the same point of view. And I guess I want to have you expand on this comment we got from a listener, Susan, who writes in and says, can someone explain more about what's really in the drilling mud? It's not harmless mud. It's toxic. And this is affecting people's water wells as well. So if you could expand on that.
Sure. Two parts of that. First, Bob, when I'm listening to Bob speak, he's expressing concerns that so many people have, and he is right in everything that he says. And it also shows just how informed some residents are about what's going on, and how Mariner East has really woken many of us up to what can happen to us because our government allows this to happen. Going to the other question about the drilling mud. So the drilling mud is mostly water, but then the next biggest ingredient is bentonite, which is a naturally occurring clay mineral. And then in addition to that, there could be some contaminants from the process. You could have some hydrocarbons in there. And then there's also undisclosed proprietary ingredients. And we just heard from the AG in the criminal charges that Energy Transfer was adding unapproved additives. So that has always been a big concern of ours. Bentonite, the Energy Transfer tries to say it's totally benign. It's used in many applications, filtering, you know, in the production of different sort of beverages. But at bottom line is you are not supposed to ingest it. The FDA has actually issued warnings about ingesting it. And this bentonite and these drilling fluids have found their way into, in the AG's report, we know almost 200 wells have been contaminated. That does not include the ones that have not been reported on and the ones that have already settled with Sunoco in order to get water back to their homes and had to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So it's safe to say hundreds of private water wells have been impacted.
I want to read this comment from Mike. He says there's a national security perspective of having these pipelines and supplies of natural gas. He says, I'm very sympathetic towards the people who live near the pipelines, but our country's energy independence is also important. I want to go to State Rep. Danielle Friel-Otten on this, because I guess what we learned earlier from Susan Phillips is we're not talking about natural gas that's heating people's homes here. We're really talking about liquid gas that's going to be turned into plastics to be produced in Scotland, right?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this projects like Mariner East have absolutely nothing to do with energy independence. Mariner East is 100% an export pipeline to ship the byproducts of fracking, ethane, propane, butane, primarily ethane, overseas to cracker plants to create more plastic, specifically more single-use plastics, which are destroying our oceans, which are polluting our waterways and causing problems in their own right. And in addition to that, there's nothing that gives us more energy independence than community self-reliance and our ability to generate energy right here in our country with renewable energy that comes from nature and the sun and the wind and the water. That we don't have to go to war over, that we don't have to ship across oceans. There's nothing more energy independent than creating an energy system that is reliant on what is here in our communities, in our country, and that doesn't require wars over resources from other places. And if we were providing energy just for our own country, that would be one conversation. But truly, this is not that's a big myth when it comes to this issue. This is about energy independence or national security. This is about corporations making big profits, making plastic junk.
Professor Wiseman, I want to bring you back into the conversation. You're hearing from concerned citizens who were calling in, who were writing in. When you look at the bigger picture and you look at history, what do you think is most, I guess, instructive or a way forward that you would hope, advocates would take up and learn from?
I think those advocates who are concerned about the location of the pipelines in their backyards have several avenues. So New Jersey and New York, for example, have denied water quality certifications under the Clean Water Act for several pipelines, and those pipeline companies gave up. So several big pipelines planned have recently been canceled, in part due to state environmental agencies saying, we are still concerned about the impacts on water resources. We are not assured that those impacts have been addressed, and therefore the Clean Water Act permits required for the pipeline should not issue. So I think at the permitting phase, there are options here for those communities who think this is not the right place for a pipeline. Now, there were also concerns expressed by callers about the use of the land for the pipeline without consent. There's the use of eminent domain for interstate pipelines with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And historically, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in granting eminent domain for these pipelines, has primarily considered their economic need, whether they enhance competition, et cetera. FERC is taking into account more of the environmental concerns, and it's currently creating an Office of Public Participation, which might help to provide more meaningful stakeholder input in the decision to build that pipeline to begin with.
Yeah. You know, one thing I was struck by when I was going through the grand jury report was some details essentially around how when the company Energy Transfer was trying to even do this work, they couldn't find enough skilled horizontal drillers to do it. And they brought in people from out of state who weren't really familiar with the Pennsylvania geology. And as we've kind of learned through this hour, some of the geology is especially vulnerable to cracking. And you kind of really have to know what you're doing to be able to do the drilling correctly. And they had people who were young and inexperienced, which caused problems. Back to you, Ginny. Was that surprising for you to learn that level of detail in the report?
No, it's not surprising to us at all. Residents have expressed concerns about some of these proposed methods and everything. I mean, in West Whiteland Township, again, where I live, and we have seen since February a series of sinkholes happen as they've tried to use auger bore through this karst geology. And everything that has happened, residents spoke to at a public hearing we had back in 2018. I spoke specifically to the geology. I actually have a background. I have a bachelor's in earth science and a master's in soil chemistry. And all of these concerns were ignored. I personally have reviewed some of the geological reports submitted to the DEP for some of these restarts and reapprovals. And I have found not just inadequate reports, but also some false reports of things that I and others have witnessed and documented. And it's very concerning.
And I'm just curious on a personal level, you know, this is very much impacting your life. Do you feel like this moment, okay, you've got some vindication from the Attorney General and you feel hopeful moving forward, or just a sense of defeat?
Oh, no, I do not feel a sense of defeat. I do think that the Attorney General's announcement really just spoke to our concerns. But at the end of the day, his charges at most will just amount to more pay to pollute and, you know, a slap on the wrist for this. We will keep fighting to have Mariner East halted because of the unacceptable, unnecessary, unmitigated risk that it presents to our families and communities. Have the permits pulled. Construction is not complete. And
you think you can stop this still?
Well, we have to. We have to have that hope. We have to hold our state regulators accountable and our electeds. Governor Wolf has the ability to pull the permits and to halt the operation. Because we have no way to protect our families and communities. The DEP should not be issuing more permits for this, and that's needed at Marsh Creek Lake in order for them to advance. So we have a lot of hope.
State Rep. Danielle Freelotten, I want to give you the final word, just about 30 seconds left. Are you hopeful for what happens next, or how are you going to act?
I am hopeful in that I know that this has been a result of all of the work of community, all of the work of stakeholders like Ginny and other neighbors who've done the work to document, who are out there watching what's happening and making sure there's a record and turning over every rock, every single rock that's available. And I know even today that there are still rocks to be unturned. And as long as there are people willing to do that work, we always have hope. And, you know, I have two little kids. I have a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, and their future is the most important thing to me in this world. And till my dying breath, I will fight to make sure that their world is safer, that is healthier, and that they have a vibrant future to look forward to. So
I have to end it there.
A lot of hope.
Danielle Friel-Otten, thank you so much. She was one of our guests here, along with Ginny Marcel Kerslake, WHYY and State Impact reporter Susan Phillips, as well as Penn State environmental law professor Hannah Wiseman. Thank you so much for this conversation. Plenty more to get into, and you can find us on our podcast. You can always listen to more Radio Times online, and thank you.